I expect he'll stay there doing that till he falls out of his astral body into hell. I have never hunted for money, but I imagined that by searching round one could find hoards here and there, but you must remember that, when on Earth you can melt down a gold pot and turn it into coin, you can't do that here. Here we have not yet reached the stage of pure form as in the spirit plane, but we have left matter proper behind. Do you follow me? J. W. Yes, perfectly. Now, when I was in Burma, I often saw the Chinese in their temples burning paper money, clothes, etc., to send to the spirits in the next world. Do you think it would work? HJL Yes, to a limited extent. If the person concentrated his mind sufficiently on the dead person, the goods would go to him, but you must distinguish between their astral form and spirit form. The latter, which is form only, would go on to the spirit plane, but, at the same time, would be of little real use except as evidence to the dead man that he was still remembered on Earth. That idea would benefit him. For the rest, he would create thought forms of clothes, etc., which would do the work just as well. On the other hand, on the astral plane only the astral form of a paper coat or paper money would appear. I doubt if the latter would be recognized by those who keep the shops for business here, except, of course, real paper money, that is banknotes. In any case, however, it's merely playing at things, or else repeating years' custom from habit. We have no real needs such as food or new clothes, and things like these chessmen we can always get without giving money for them if only we look around a bit. Yes, the use of money, buying and selling, are merely earth habits which are best shaken off as soon as possible, otherwise they draw men down to the division of the materialists in hell. But you must be off. It's day in England. See how the dreamers are hurrying back. He was right, and I hurried off. Chapter 20, A Visit to the Battlefield. May 14, 1916. I found Rex and HJL together, and with them several other officers and men. Said, "We've got the adjutant back and the officer is here." W. "How did you get hold of the adjutant again?" The officer. "Oh, by hard work. I kept following him about till I was able to persuade him what a complete delusion the whole of the battle was, and then he came away. I brought back several others as well." Rex then came up and said, "We are going to start on our first expedition. Would you like to come with us?" J. W. "Yes, decidedly." So H. J. L. and RLW, the officer, and four others beside myself started off together. We seemed to travel swiftly, indeed almost to float over the soil, till presently the noise of the artillery could be heard. It rapidly grew in volume, and the air grew murky and dark. Soon we could see little for the darkness, and a wild tempest seemed to be raging. The wind blew in our faces and beat against us more fiercely every step we took. The officer. "These are the waves of hate and passion set in motion by the struggle. Look, here come some of the dead." As he ceased, I saw shadows passing, not by ones or twos, but whole companies a couple of hundred strong. Some seemed red, but most were dark grey. Here and there one shone brightly, and these separated themselves quickly from the others and rose faster and faster till they vanished. The officer. "The white ones are very exceptional. They are those whose lives have been remarkably pure, and generally they have given their lives to save another. The red are thoroughly evil, or at least dominated by hate. The grey are ordinary folk, neither very good nor very bad. See how, even in death, they follow each other like sheep. See the battle line on this plain. Now, amid the murk, I perceived lines of wild figures rushing across the broken ground, and these were met by others, Germans. They fought and fell and rose and fought again." J. W. "Do you help the Germans?" The officer. "I don't. Not yet far enough advanced, I suppose, but I can't forgive the brutes for all they have done. Of course, a lot of their own folk do the work, and spirits who were formerly from neither group of nations. There are, too, a fair number of quite advanced spirits from the spirit planes who are directing the work, and to these nationality seems to make no difference. But on the astral plane, And even in the lower division of the spirit plane, it still does influence our feelings, so we should be useless. You can't act a part here, you know. We will draw even nearer to the earth plane, if you like. Down we dropped, and seemed to pass through the ground itself. The darkness grew less, and in its place a shadow world arose. Unsubstantial it seemed, very different from the firm landscape to be seen in the astral plane we had just left. "What is this?" I inquired. "The officer. The world is seen by an astral. Look, there is the river Somme, and those shadows are a line of hills." The storm still raged fiercely, but the few trees that I could see appeared to be but little affected. Of course, these winds were generated by the passions of the combatants and did not affect merely material things. Small figures advanced and fell, and as they fell the shadows became more substantial and swept past us. Great streams of men seemed to be rising into the dark clouds that hung just above our head. Gradually, the landscape was blotted out by these clouds which descended and engulfed us, or perhaps, we rose up into them. We were again back on the astral plane proper. I sighed. A curious spot of this meeting place of the world and the astral plane. The effect is rather different from the effect I get when I find myself returning. HJL replied, "Yes, but you are abnormal in that you know how to employ your spiritual, astral, and corporeal faculties, and remember experiences in all three. Very few can do that. Further, the condition just now is abnormal owing to the excessive amount of passion being generated at the time of death, and by the great number of vigorous young men who are passing over every moment." With this I had to be content, for the office now said, "You had better be off, as you are rather in the way, and we want to begin business." So, having said goodbye, I withdrew a short way and watched them go up to various groups of soldiers who were looking on at the fighting and began to talk to them. I noticed Rex talking to a tall young officer who was wearing the badge of the York and Lancasters. Then I concentrated my thoughts on getting back. Everything faded, then I lost consciousness. Chapter 21, A Curio Shop. July 17, 1916. When I lived in the street where Rex lived, I guessed that their efforts must have been fairly successful, as I noticed that several empty houses were now full of soldiers. I also noticed that a great many new houses had appeared. I even saw one rising slowly before my eyes. It was evidently being destroyed by gunfire. The roof and upper stories began to appear first, suspended as it were in the air, but whether it waited till all the base was destroyed before that appeared, I can't say, but think not, for it took shape so rapidly. Anyway, there it was. I entered Rex's house, and HJL said at once, "You can come round with me to some of the shops, if you like." Rex came along with us, and we talked about domestic matters till at length we stopped in front of a shop. "I thought it would interest you," HJL said. Its owner was an old curio dealer in Ypres. He lived a good many years ago, and has here a most marvelous collection of all sorts of curios. We entered, and I found a funny, wizened old man. "The spirit in the astral plane inhabits an astral body which is largely molded on the condition of its physical body at death, therein differing very markedly from those on the spiritual plane, whose forms are largely molded by the development of their spiritual faculties." The owner of the shop at once spoke to me, but whether in French I didn't know, but I understood him perfectly and replied in English, as it seemed. And he too understood. "You are, L. can see," he cried, "a lover of the antique and curious. Good, follow me." Truly, he had the most marvelous collection of all sorts of stuff. Furniture of every period and country, weapons, armor, china, old glass, Roman gods and Indian idols, there seemed to be no end to the things he had. When I told him I had recently returned from the East, and told him some of the things I had obtained there, he was greatly interested. He seemed to know a great deal about the East, and this led me to inquire whether he had traveled there when on Earth. "No, alas," he replied, "but since I died I have often been there, and now I know it well. Is this not a splendid Buddha? I have some very fine ones, but I think this fine figure of Shiva is one of my finest works of art." choice, is it not, J. W., and how do you get all these things? He, oh, they seem to come to me. I sometimes think inanimate objects are not inanimate, but have a queer kind of intelligence of their own. I have once or twice picked up something by the roadside, or in an empty house, but not often. They just appear in the shop. Why? Look, there's a fresh grandfather clock. He hurried off to look at it, and at that moment H.J.L. told me I must be off, and I obeyed. Chapter 22, A Lecture by the Officer. July 21, 1916. On entering the room where X and H.J.L. were, I found the officer giving a sort of lecture to a large number of soldiers. He was explaining to them what life on the astral plane was like, and why a man must try to shake off the influence of earth passions, especially the desire to continue fighting here. He wore the full dress uniform of a certain famous regiment, but I will not describe it. One of the great dangers that besets the newcomer, he said, is the desire to continue exactly what he was doing when he died. In the case of a man who has died simply on a sick bed, earth desires and habits have grown weaker, but when a man is cut off in the very act of doing something, his whole mind being fixed on it, a strong tendency arises to continue doing the same thing over here. Often, if this desire is indulged in, the newcomer keeps on repeating it again and again, and even after his spirit has departed from his astral body, this astral body, now nothing but an astral shell, continues mechanically to repeat his former actions. Hence, many ghosts which are seen hunting for something in the haunted room of some old manor house or aimlessly wandering to and fro, are really the empty astrals of some earthbound spirit, who continued doing this sort of thing for a long time after death before going on to the next plane of existence. For, remember, that is merely a place of transition. Here you may save your souls or damn them for many an age. Here make amends for your past misdeeds, or add to your sum of evil till you sink under it to hell. A man interrupted here. I suppose you are one of the pie sort who has been saved here, done all sorts of good deeds here and so got quit of all your former sins. Another broke in with a sneer. Oh, no. He is one of those stained full glass window saints who have never done anything wrong. This seemed to nettle the officer, who replied sharply, you talk like a fool of things you know nothing about. It's just because I lived an evil life, died in sin, piled up more evil here, sank into hell, and, still driven on by evil, sought the lowest depths of hell, that I now urge you strongly not to do those things which may cause you to suffer as I have suffered. He then began to relate the course of his life, which has been given elsewhere, gone west, and as he went on, a great silence fell on any who listened. Rex, I noticed, sat the spellbound as the awful story unfolded itself. On and on he went, sparing himself in no detail. Step by step he traced his downward path through three worlds, and, as I left he was still continuing. No one except H.J.L. rose as I slipped out, not even Rex, all were too wrapped up in what was being told to them. For a moment H.J.L. stood on the doorway bidding me goodbye. Did I not do well in getting him to give us his life story? He asked. Indeed you did, I replied, and we both stood silent for a while. Then I turned away, and began the return journey. Chapter 23, The Real War. July 24, 1916. When I began to approach the astral plane on this occasion, I realized at once that something unusual was happening. The whole atmosphere seemed blood red, and at times it tossed in waves like a sea of fire. It was almost impossible for a while to see anything. For a moment I hesitated to plunge into this seething mass, but an unseen force seemed to whirl me on, and, even as I hesitated, I had passed into it. Gradually I began to perceive things, and what I saw filled me with dismay. On every side I saw hideous shapes, evil and loathsome. They seemed to stretch in endless phalanx after phalanx, hateful, abhorrent. I looked round wildly for H.J.L. but could not see him. And suddenly one of them sprang towards me. It was like nothing human nor animal. Its eyes were set obliquely in its face, and were narrow, yea, and hateful. It constantly changed in color from gray to brown, and so through a peculiar orange brown to red. It appeared to have countless arms, or, rather, suckers, like those of an octopus. It was huge in size, as large as a house, bloated, and repulsive, and glided towards me with the evident intention of attacking me. I tried to run away, but it cast out one of its long arms, which caught me up and held me for an instant, and then El spoke. Up to then I had regarded the creature as the astral of some prehistoric monster, but I now realized it must be an elemental, partaking of the nature of man and beast, and something which was neither. The thoughts it uttered were these: "Fool, I have you. You came here into our realm before your time. You are not even an astral being. In your conceit you have come into a part of this realm which even those who have a right here shun. Here we rule, and destroy all who once lived on earth. Here we make them our slaves. We drain their astral life from them and so strengthen our own. I hate you. I hate all men and all animals. All creatures that have ever had a body or claim to have a soul. I have neither." I called to RJL, but he came not. Instead, a bright white light began to grow amid the red reek and mist. The monster seemed to shrivel, its arm loosened its grip of me, and still the light grew in strength. It took form, and a huge figure made of fire appeared beside me and overshadowed me. Majestic, and full of solemn dignity, calm and noble of countenance, it far o'ertopped the monster. Between the great protagonists I seemed the merest pygmy. No words were spoken, no thought passed that I could follow. Simply a silence, and swiftly beneath the weight of that silence the monster shriveled and wilted, till it vanished entirely. I knew my rescuer, it was my guardian spirit, but even as I strove to thank him he slowly faded away. Suddenly I realized I was blind. I could see nothing. Little by little my dazed eyes recovered, and again I saw the red mist all around me, and on every side grinning, mocking faces, which leered and gibbered and threatened me, but drew no nearer. Amid them I passed, and seemed to get no nearer to my goal. The red waves began to increase their motion, and the elementals, in like manner, appeared to sway to and fro. Then I perceived I was caught in the midst of a great battle compared to which the astral battle I had seen between the European hosts was nothing. These monstrous creatures were rushing in endless waves against a huge army of spirits of light, and the battle raged with unabating fury. Sometimes one side, sometimes another, would appear to gain the upper hand, but never for long. I was tossed up and down, to and fro like wreckage on the waves of the sea. It was not so much a struggle between individuals as between a wall of white fire and a wally of red mist and smoke. Backward and forward the great line swayed. High above and deep down below, it stretched, and far out of sight on every side. Suddenly the white fire seemed to sweep forward at one spot and catch me in its grasp, and as it rolled back it carried me with it. Now I was out of the hateful red mist, and, instead of the hideous monsters, saw noble figures made of fire. These reminded me of my own guardian spirit, but they were neither so majestic nor so distant from me. They seemed nearer to men, but they were not astral beings. They paid no heed to me. Indeed, they seemed to have no time to attend to anything but their task of holding back the powers of evil. At length I left this dreadful battleground, and found myself in the village where HJL lived. As soon as I reached the house I found HJL, who was anxiously watching for me. I told him what had happened, and HJL said, "The whole astral plane is in a very agitated state. The powers of evil are making a tremendous effort, and have engulfed large areas quite recently. Nor is the conflict confined to the earth and the astral planes, but the spirit plane is shaken also. They are pouring up out of hell itself and trying to penetrate into the realm of half-belief. You remember the Great One of Darkness where I met the officer? Well, one who came down here a short time ago told me it has poured forward over a large part of the stony waste and driven back the light. Moreover, some of the houses of rest in hell itself have been stormed, and even some of the ministering spirits who work in hell have fallen away. How far up and how far down the gigantic conflict rages, I do not know, but it shows no sign of abatement as yet. The powers of evil are certainly making a supreme effort. What you have told me about your guardian spirit's appearance, however, has comforted me greatly. I see that you have advanced far enough to be safe amid these dangers. But you have been here long enough, and I hope you will find the way back easier." I went out, swept swiftly through the red mist, so swiftly that I hardly saw the elementals, and then found myself beside my own body on earth. Then I lost consciousness. Chapter 24, The Dangers of This Lowest Division. July 28, 1916. On entering the astral plane I again found myself amid a thick, red atmosphere, and surrounded by evil-looking elementals. Several of those creatures attempted to bar my path, and, as before, my guardian spirit had to intervene before I could get clear of them. As soon as he made himself visible they faded and vanished, but, even after this, it took me some time to get through the contending hosts of good and evil spirits into a comparatively tranquil area. Comparatively, I said, for here the noise of the astral battle between the newly dead filled all surrounding space. Amid this I struggled for a while and saw hosts of soldiers hurling themselves upon each other and a constant stream of newcomers pouring up from the earth itself as they leapt from their shattered bodies. At length I had passed through this area and reached the calm and quiet of the house in which Rex and HJL were. After describing to them what I had experienced, I said, "What would have happened to me if my guide had not come to my aid? HJL, you would never have returned to Earth, or, in short, you would have died. Several persons have so perished. They came here ill-prepared, and fell victims to these evil elementals. Sometimes, however, the result of unwise wandering here is to enable some elemental to obtain an influence over the experimenter, which results in either moral degeneration or else mania. More usually, however, the effect is merely a temporary haunting of the experimenter which frightens him so severely that he gives up the experiments and alike avoids the danger and loses the reward of his efforts. Just now, conditions are particularly bad over here owing to the mass of evil passions which have been set in motion on the astral plane by the great world conflict, and which have strengthened the powers of evil. J.W. But what of the constant dreamers who come? Are they also exposed to the same danger? HJL, not to the same extent, though even so, the danger does exist. But still, as they are less conscious of their surroundings, so they seem to be less noticeable to the proper inhabitants of this sphere. Moreover, in some mysterious way which I myself cannot fathom, it does not seem to be always necessary to pass through the strata of evil passions where the great fight between the evil and good elementals is. You yourself have not always done so, and why you should just now be obliged to pass through that strata when you come here I cannot say. I think this has been done by the direction of your guardian spirit for your instruction. Surely, the guardian spirits of less experienced visitors doubtless take them by another route, or perhaps if that is not possible, bear them through these strata of conflict with their eyes closed, as it were. Certainly, this would be possible if a guardian spirit desired it. In that condition the astral would know nothing of these regions, and would be protected by its guardian spirit from all harm. But nevertheless, the fact must not be overlooked that the numbers of dreamers who come here has markedly decreased due, no doubt, partly to the fact that the struggle between the forces of good and evil is attaining to a state of fury seldom before witnessed by any on this side of the grave. I think the biblical account of "and there was war in heaven" must be based on some such scene as you have now witnessed, and not have been so much a prophecy of a future battle as the account of a conflict then raging on the astral plane. After all, it was written not so long before the fall of Jerusalem, and may have been connected with that event. Any other questions, for it's about time you were off? J.W. Why? I've only just arrived. I'm sorry, but you now take a long time getting here and, in any case, if you must go, you must, and there's an end of it. W. You seemed unable to explain fully one or two points just now. How was that? Usually you know all about things here. You must remember this is not my plane of existence. I belong to the spirit plane, and further, that conditions are far from normal. Indeed, One might almost say they were unprecedented. When I am not quite certain, I think it far better to emphasize my uncertainty lest I should mislead you. Then asked me a few questions about father, to which I gave suitable replies. I then inquired how the rescue work was going on. Well, we have got quite a nice little band together, but of late, so terrific has been the struggle and storm on the strata nearest the earth that we have practically had to abandon our efforts and concentrate our attention on keeping those we have, not by any means an easy task. HJL really, Jack, you must return. As he spoke all went black, and I lost consciousness. It should be noted that I knew nothing of my return journey, and this rather supports the theory of HJL that my guardian spirit deliberately closed my consciousness as to what was happening in the planes through which I passed. Next time I shall inquire whether a similar unconsciousness can be induced on a man who has died, or whether it can only be induced in one still connected with the flesh. Chapter 25, The Antechamber of Hell. July 31, 1916. Again, as before, Jay was aware of the hideous conflict of the good and the evil powers. I determined to try and note some of these strange beings, so unlike anything I had ever even dreamed of. I saw a good number of bloated, shapeless monstrosities, with slanting eyes and masses of feelers, more animal than human in shape, such creatures as the foul animal that had barred my path the first time. There was a creature that looked like a serpent, save that its head was almost human but viler than the most depraved human could be. Another type was of the nature of an enormous bat. But the head was different. These creatures mostly had huge goggling eyes and beak-like mouths. There was quite a number of huge dragons, not unlike the fabled monsters of legend, together with strange creatures like griffins, huge spider-like monstrosities, and curious masses of fungus growth, which moved and floated amid the red waves. The only thing they had in common was their eyes, which were either large, goggling, and globular in shape, or else narrow and slanting. All were yellow or red, and absolutely malevolent in expression. Here and there I saw creatures which looked like men, and yet were not, and also strange composite creatures, half human, half animal. One of these man-like monsters, huge in stature, and apparently a leader, barred my path. Enormous he was, and his shape, though blurred and indistinct, took the form of a naked man, with huge, distorted, and misshapen limbs. His face was black, save for the eyes, no nose and mouth at all, just two long, narrow, slit-like eyes, set at a curious angle, the top reaching towards the ears, the bottom almost joining just below where the mouth should have been. Yet the thing could speak, or, rather, deliver its thoughts, for it cried out, "I have heard of your coming and going thus unmolested through our ranks, but this time they shall end. Stay." And I stayed. Cold dread seized hold of me. My heart seemed to stand still, but, of course, I had no such organ, yet such is the force of habit that I experienced just this feeling. I cried on my guide for help as the evil monster rushed on me, and my angelic guide came. But though the other creatures fell away before the rays of blinding light which poured from him, yet the leader moved not. Instead, he seemed to pour forth in answer from his whole body clouds of dull brown smoke, a kind of darkness which beat up against the light and held it there, while from under the shadow of the darkness his followers gathered and shrieked defiance at my guide. Fiercer and fiercer grew the light, and denser grew there. Massive brown-black smoke. Then I perceived that we were moving. I sensed it, as it were, for I could see nothing but a ring of darkness around the spot of intense light in which I stood, and which burnt me fiercely. On we moved, and suddenly the wall of darkness shivered, and I perceived why. We had reached the spot where the powers of light came up against the powers of darkness, and their light had joined hands with that of my guardian spirit. Then it faded away, and on I went through similar scenes to those described before till I came to HJL and RLW in their house. Here I told them of my adventures on the way, and inquired, "Do you think that this power of my guides to make me unaware of what is happening would be effective if I were dead, or do all who die have to pass through that field of struggling spirits?" RLW: "Well, if it helps to elucidate that point. I've never passed through it, but I've seen quite a number of elementals on different occasions.